Falcons fans, it's been a bit of a break since we were last here on the FalconCast podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Jay Adams, Daniel Cox here. We had to take a week off because a week ago at this time, I had absolutely no voice whatsoever. And it's honestly, it's just starting to come back. It's frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, there is no podcast if there's no voice.
There's no voice, there's no podcast. I actually had, I made that announcement on Twitter.
Yeah.
And somebody replied and said, oh, come on, Matt Ryan and Roddy White would play if they were sick and they couldn't talk. And I said, well, if Matt Ryan didn't have a right arm,
right,
he wouldn't play.
Yeah.
If Roddy White didn't have his hands, he wouldn't play.
Right.
I didn't have my voice, so I couldn't play.
Yeah. It's kind of like a parallel to that is our fingers are very important to what we do.
If we were to break our fingers. No, can't tweet.
Oh, my goodness.
Can't tweet.
Yeah.
It'll be very difficult.
Pianist breaking his fingers. He can't
produce
his masterpieces anymore.
We should look into insurance policies for our hands.
I think you're right. I mean, actually.
Because they're pretty important.
I mean, you have one on your computer.
Right. So, I mean, if that gets broken, we're covered. But if our fingers break, what is it? Better luck next time?
Bad news.
Bad news. Bad news for everybody involved. So.
Yeah. Learning how to type one-handed with your left hand.
Nah, I don't want to do that. Well, anyways, it's been a while since we've spoken here on the podcast. Mm-hmm. There's been a couple of things have happened.
Somewhat eventful around here.
Yeah, yeah. The NFL draft. Mm-hmm. We had some mini camp. We had some new Falcons added to the mix, and so lots to talk about.
Yeah,
we're gonna kind of go through all of it.
Let's do it.
Let's get started.
It was a Thursday night.
It was a Thursday night in this very office that we are currently in. And what a fun weekend.
Yeah.
It was great just from our perspective. We had a lot of fun covering it. And, you know, it's always fun to see, like, these new guys come in and get added to the fold. And all of your questions finally get answered. I think that's the big
thing. Yeah, it's what is Thomas going to do? And I think half of the response to the draft is also, you know, fans, you know, they have their opinion of what should happen, mm-hmm. and how what happens in the draft affects everything else, you know, and other positions, and things start to unfold a little bit after, you know, Thomas basically, it's like a phase one of his magic plan for 2013, if you will,
right.
You know, him and coach, I guess you could say, but it does create interesting opportunities or situations around the team, and it's fun to see how one affects the other.
Right, and for us, and we'll get into this later, but it's a chance for us to see how right we were or wrong we were.
Yes,
you know, during the times leading up to the draft, and I think you know, we're both pretty happy that this time it's a positive outcome for us.
Yeah, so I think we did a nice job in that.
I think so. And we'll give ourselves a proper pat on the back later in the show.
Fair
here.
Enough.
But it is just that final time when all of your questions kind of get answered, you know which direction the team is going. And you went into the draft thinking that defense was going to be the focus. And guess what?
Clearly.
Defense was clearly the focus. You know, Desmond Trufant, Robert Alford. I mean, I guess a little surprising that you go back to back corners there, but it's not, and I can explain why. And then you get a defensive end, Malachi Goodman. You get another one with Mpanga. You know, you go with a tight end and in Toilolo, but then you draft back to back safeties, and so really, the defense was addressed during that time period.
Yeah,
but. Yeah, go ahead.
No, there were surprises, and I think the safeties, you know, well, four defensive backs, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, if you'd said 2 weeks prior to the draft, you know, Thomas is going to spend four of however many picks he had. I guess it was 11
at
that time.
And ended up at 8.
Yeah. On four defensive backs, you would have been a little surprised by that.
Yeah.
But, you know, once everything, you know, we'll get later on to what kind of what we see in some of these guys and what we've seen through, you know, through the recent mini camp. But, you know, you see them and it starts, it kind of makes sense after the fact.
Yes.
You look back and you're like, okay, well, I understand that. That makes sense. I can see, you know, there's always, I think, an element of not foreseeing, but looking to the future, mm-hmm. In Thomas's drafts as well. And I think you saw it again this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we were, and we'll know this next year, we'll come up with, we got a blueprint basically of how Thomas goes about his drafts. And it's no more clear than it was this year, mm-hmm. when you're talking about leadership and you're talking about seniors and captains. And these are the guys that you wrote about it today, mm-hmm. on the website. These are the guys that he looks at. These are the guys that he values. So from here on, if you're at home and you're doing your little mock draft, okay, and you've got a junior in there.
Yeah.
You're not going to be right. Chances are you're not going to be right.
Significantly.
So, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, now you kind of know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm certainly going to be looking at that here in the future, and I'm going to put it through the filter.
Yeah.
When we talk about a guy, is this guy a senior? Is this guy a team captain?
Mm-hmm.
And if he's not, there's a pretty good possibility that he's not going to be the guy that the Falcons take on draft day.
Absolutely, and that's a lesson for all future Falcons as well.
Yeah. Right.
At home, you don't just do your physical workouts, but do your mental workouts.
Hey, you got to be a leader.
Your leadership learnings and be inspiring. And
exactly.
But it makes sense, and you look inside that locker room, and we have the opportunity to spend a couple of, you know, days, not days, but, you know, through the media sessions and around these guys and in that locker room, and it's clear that's the type of guy that's in there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they all have different backgrounds and, you know, different personalities and all that stuff, but they do have that kind of thing in common. And I think and we saw it a lot last year, they're committed to each other more than anything. And then that team idea really is strong with these guys. And I think it comes from that aspect.
Absolutely. And, you know, you look at some of these guys and, you know, you're also talking about, okay, so you value leadership. You value a guy who spent 4 years in college as mm-hmm. opposed to just three. But I think this year you notice maybe a little bit of a trend that you value some speed. You want to get a little faster. And I think Trufant and I think Alford are two guys who make you faster. And honestly, you can also take a look at a guy like Mapanga, where as he's not going to add to overall team speed, but speed at the defensive end position,
mm-hmm.
I think he's going to add to that because he plays with that kind of Croy Bierman-like motor, where he's flying all over the field. And we'll go
that's,
into it.
That's a
we'll
good
we'll get into some of these guys, and we'll start off at the top, Desmond Trufant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you trade up to number 22, you snag Trufant. Trufant's the guy you want. You know, there was some talk that the Falcons could have been interested in DJ Hayden. He goes at number 13 to the Raiders. From there, I guess you kind of wonder, is Trufant going to be there when you pick at 30? And I guess, you know, obviously you don't make that move up to 22 if you think he is. So clearly you've got your sights set on this guy. You move up and grab him, and I love the move.
I do too. You know, cornerback was the need. You know, I think most people felt that, and Thomas believes that. And, you know, we'll never know some of the other things that fell into place or had to happen for Trufant, because, you know, or maybe he is their top ranked player. You know, maybe he was their top guy in the draft.
Never know.
You never know. But I think when you see a team trade up, they're going after a guy. You know, and I think that's, you know, the biggest indicator of that, but I think that's also a great indicator of how much they like the guy and they didn't want to lose him. Because, you know, Xavier Rhodes, you know, if Trufant had begun to slip, he was, or that second corner, whoever that person would have been, if they had begun to slip a little bit, you know, who knows who would have been there.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or maybe a lower caliber player, and that's the guy they wanted, so they went up and got him. And I don't think – I personally felt like, you know, in the trade value charts and all that stuff, is I kind of put that aside. It just – the deal felt fair.
Right. And, you know, here's the other thing. If Trufant's off the board and you're still sitting there at 30, do you maybe take Alfred at 30? And maybe maybe in hindsight now you get this incredible deal where you've taken Alfred at 60 and you got Trufant at 22, and suddenly you got two guys that you targeted at 30 who are now on your roster. And that's an absolutely huge thing. And just going back to Trufant, you got to love his pedigree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Marcus in the NFL, mm-hmm. His older brother Isaiah, mm-hmm. Also with some experience in the league. Mm-hmm. Marcus actually just yesterday got signed by Jacksonville.
Yeah,
so they'll see each other in the preseason. But you like to see a guy who's a senior, a captain, who has NFL in his blood.
Yeah, I mean
that's a pretty good combination.
And it's like I think as obviously, as the NFL continues to grow and over time, we see it in basketball a lot now. You know, former players, their sons coming into the league, and they have that pedigree, and a lot of them come in and they kind of have an understanding of professional sports and how to make that work. And you see some of that now with, you know, Trufant is an example, and there were a number of guys in this draft that had older brothers or fathers that played in the league. And yeah, it's, you can't ask for more or better criteria than, you know, you're starting right there if you're going to build a football player, so to speak. You know, you want him to be experienced, a good leader, and understand the business, so to speak. So yeah, I think he's a great pick.
Yeah. And just talking to him, you know, we got a chance to meet him right after he got drafted. The day after he got drafted, he was here in the building. We got to meet him. Great, great kid. Very well spoken. Seemed to handle it all really well. It's a whirlwind when you get drafted.
Yeah, you can only imagine.
You know, you've got a private plane coming to pick you up, and then you're meeting everybody under the sun inside the building, and you know,
a lot of handshakes,
a lot of questions, a lot of stuff. So, he handled it extremely well, and then he got onto minicamp, and I thought did a fantastic job there, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit too.
Yeah.
Robert Alford, another pick again, you know. When we got the pick, we were scratching our heads a little bit because we're like, okay, so we're going two cornerbacks. But there's a couple of reasons why that's okay.
Yeah.
One, you can never have too many cornerbacks.
Right.
Never. I don't think that's even possible.
You saw that. I mean, last year is an example.
Exactly.
What happened on defense for the Falcons last year is an example of that.
Great point. Because there was a time last year, and I can't remember what game, but Grimes was out.
Mm-hmm.
Dante went down. Asante went down. Like two plays later, Dante went down. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you've got Chris Owens and Dominique Franks and Robert McClain out there running your secondary from the corner positions. And so having that depth of guys that you're confident can go out there and play is fantastic. But I'll tell you the other reason why that's such a genius move is that you have made sure that cornerback is not going to be a need for your team for quite some time.
Right.
Okay. You have virtually guaranteed that. If both of these guys turn out the way that you plan for them, you're not going to have to worry about cornerback, such a crucial position, for a very long time.
Absolutely.
And you say, oh, well, the Falcons have Asante Samuel. They have Robert McClain. Here's the thing. Asante Samuel's getting up there. Don't know how much longer, you know.
Yeah.
He hasn't even mentioned retirement or anything like that, but he's not going to play forever.
Yes.
Okay, so within Alford's first contract, you got to figure that Asante is going to play his last game.
Right.
Okay. And here's the other thing. McClain, who's a guy, a diamond in the rough, young guy. Mm-hmm. He's going to be around a while.
Yep.
You know, this is a contract year for him, but you got to imagine that he's going to be around for a while.
Yeah.
Now you've got three corners in this system that's you're running nickel heavy, okay, in this system. You got your three corners for a very long time.
Yeah.
Done. You can just wipe
it's
your hands
up.
Of that.
Locked up. And that's – you have – so far, it's so early in the game, but it's we have every reason to believe that these guys are going to be solid football players.
Sure.
You know? That remains to be seen. But here's the other thing that I think is interesting about the pick, and you know, this is just a theory of mine, but let's say Thomas Dimitroff walked into the draft and he had two needs on his team identified as number one needs, or 1A and 1B, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, obviously cornerback was the first one. And this may be sound strange to other people, but knowing, you know, the game of field position that happens in the NFL, and I know Coach Smith plays a lot of puts a lot of consideration into that. What if they said return man is our number one or second biggest need on this team? So what you potentially did was you walked away from the first two rounds of the draft, and maybe you even consider that position a starter. You accomplished your top two biggest needs with maybe who you consider were the top players at that position. If
exactly.
you consider Alford, you know, the top player as a returner. And I'll be honest, the name sounded familiar when we picked him, but it was only because I had glanced through some kick return stuff.
Yeah.
Most of like what I had seen, and this is, we don't have inside information. We look at the same stuff everyone else does for the most part. Most of the studying on cornerbacks I had done seemed to kind of go through David Amerson and Jamar Taylor and kind of stop there.
But from
so
I
heard the name.
From a strictly cornerback perspective, and
right.
this is why I love your point, is you get into talking about the other skills that a guy has.
Yeah.
And maybe he's a good cornerback, but maybe he's a great returner. Or maybe he's an okay cornerback, but he's a great returner. And that was the thing that's exactly what you're talking about here.
Yeah.
Is that you look at the position, okay, and we could kind of guess that the Falcons were going to come out of this draft with some kind of return possibility because things were tumultuous last year in that department. So you get a cornerback who you had just drafted, and that's why we were scratching our heads. We're like, oh, cornerback. And then the more you think about it, the more it starts to make sense.
Yeah.
But then the more research you do on this guy, because this is a guy that, you know, you and I are focused on who are the guys at 30. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of one of those fringe guys, probably top the second, middle of the second, ended up going late in the second.
Right.
So he fell off of our radar because you and I are, like, narrowed in on on the first round. So after Thursday, you and I don't know a whole lot of anything until the pick is made.
Right.
So, you know, here's a guy where you're like, okay, he's a corner. You start to learn a little bit more about him. You know that he runs a 4.3 40, and he's got return skills.
Yeah.
Well, hot dog. I mean, you just solved another one of your needs. So with Alford, you really fill two needs there. Mm-hmm. You've got a cornerback of the future, okay? Because I think we can agree that Trufant's going to be your guy on one side.
Mm-hmm.
Asante's going to be on the other side. And McClain's probably going to be your nickel.
Yeah.
Or McClain's going to be on the outside and Trufant's going to play nickel. One of the two scenarios is probably going to happen.
Yeah.
And you're going to – Alfred's going to see the field.
Yeah.
Trust me. He's going to see the field. But he's not a guy that you're expecting to come in. You know, being a guy from southeastern Louisiana playing at that level of ball – who knows what the learning curve there is as far as playing with NFL talent, but you've got the luxury of time to bring him along.
And again, you know, we go back to character traits. I mean, you spend 2 minutes with a guy, listen to him talk, you feel good about his dedication to wanting to get better.
Yes, he's confident, but he comes in and he's a guy that you can tell just wants to soak it all in. You know, he's really enjoying this experience of being an NFL player. So that's another move that I love that, you know, you just have to take a step back to fully understand.
Yeah.
You know, but then you lose the third round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next pick off the board, Malachi Goodman.
Who's kind of becoming a cult hero.
Right. Exactly. For his hands. Man, those things are like kites.
I mean, it's funny when we you know, you posted that photo on the blog and we had it on Twitter as well later that day. And when I asked him about doing it, he's like, he kind of laughed and he's like, I asked him, or I was joking, you've probably never done this before, have you? And he's like, maybe a dozen times. But he was really cool about it. But yes, his hands.
11.5 inches.
From
thumb to pinky, right?
Yeah, that's the tip.
11 and
tip.
A half. I mean, that's
that is so huge.
He's got some paws on him.
Yeah, yeah, and that was one of his. That was a piece of his scouting report, and some of the media journalist guys down here were having some fun with that night, asking him about it. But yeah, they said he has violent hands.
But yeah, they absolutely are.
Yeah.
But he's also got some of the longest arms among this year's draft class.
Absolutely.
And we got that question on Twitter because we were making a big deal out of his hands on Twitter. And somebody asked, well, I don't understand hand size. I don't understand why that means a whole lot when you're talking about defensive ends. Yeah. Well, those few extra inches, because that's really what he's got.
Yeah.
When you're talking about arm length and the size of his hands. You know, here's a guy who's 6'3", 6'4", somewhere
six
around
five,
there.
6'5", I think.
6'5"?
Yeah.
Okay. He puts his ridiculously long arms into the air, which, by the way, he could probably scratch his feet without bending over. I mean, his arms are ridiculously long. And then you've got those frying pans on the end of his arms that he calls hands.
Yes.
And you get those things up in the air, okay, and you've got a shorter quarterback like Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
He's going to have to launch that thing 14 feet in the air just to get it over Goodman. That's huge.
It is.
That is a huge advantage to have.
It is. And there's so many other things. I mean, you see the swim move, like where I don't know exactly what the play is called, but the left tackle, so to speak, is following the guy. And they're kind of getting – he's losing ground close to the quarterback inside the pocket. And, you know, you see defensive ends often trying to swat at the quarterback, just trying to do anything to disrupt him. And those arms are
– they're going to get
there.
He
doesn't have to be that close to get there.
It's like casting out a fishing pole. It's like – you don't need to be right next to the guy in order to disrupt him. And that's I think, the great thing about Goodman. And just watching him a little bit in minicamp, it's like he moves really well. Mm-hmm. I have a very good friend of mine who's a Clemson alum, and so he follows Clemson very, very closely. And first thing he sent me, I think he sent me a tweet, and he was like, you're going to love this guy. He's going to be a fantastic pro.
Yeah.
And I saw nothing to discredit that observation during minicamp. Goodman could end up being a steal, and I'm a huge fan of the kid.
I am too. After talking to him and seeing him practice, I agree. I picking a guy like that up in the fourth round, I think with some of the polish that I feel like he has. Mm-hmm. I'm not predicting like a 12 sack season or anything.
You can't have those expectations for rookies.
But we're talking about
can't.
A guy that seems like he can step in and contribute.
I think if your goal for him is to not be inactive half the season, I think that's a good goal.
Absolutely.
Fine.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And if he can exceed that, and get on the field and get some playing time and get some stats, great. It's gravy. But I don't think anybody is sitting here expecting this guy to come in and throw up 12 sacks in his first year.
Yeah.
If he did, it'd be amazing.
Shoot, I'd take it.
I would too. But, I mean, let's be real here. There's a lot of different things that can happen. And the defensive end position is now suddenly very interesting.
Yeah, totally.
Because you've got OC, you've got Bierman. You got to figure those are your two starters on a defensive line rotation.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got Cliff Matthews, you've got Massaqua, both young defensive ends. Mm-hmm. You lose Sidbury in the offseason. Now you add Goodman and you add Mpanga. Okay, Mpanga fits more into the Croy Bierman mold.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's going to be a guy who you're going to have his hand in the dirt. Sometimes you're going to stand him up. Sometimes it looks like, anyways.
Yeah.
So he's going to be one of those hybrid kind of guys. It seems crowded. Seems like a crowded position. So, be fun to watch in camp.
Yeah. And I think some of those guys present some interesting position duality, so to speak, to use fancy terms there. But like a guy like Cliff Matthews, I think, is helpful because when they decrease that front line number to maybe three in some looks, he's helpful as a defensive end in a lineman role like that as well. So there's some versatility with these guys. So I think the numbers, I haven't looked at them yet, but I think as we get halfway through training camp, that's what we start thinking about. I think just numbers at position groups, and as you try to start to figure out the what some of the countries may be thinking in terms of who may be sticking around and leaving.
Sure.
But there are some interesting matches, and they're all young guys, though.
Right, and let's not forget, too, that Jonathan Babineau spent a lot of time at defensive end last year, too.
Exactly.
So, you know, when you've got three really good defensive tackles and three guys that you want to have on the field in Peters, Jerry, and Babineau, you find a way, and that's one of the ways that Mike Nolan's creative mind has come up with, you know, to get those guys on the field. So right now you've got a lot of options along the defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
And, you lose a couple of guys. You lose Sedbury, you lose Vance Walker.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got Travion Robertson, who I think is going, just my personal opinion, I think he's going to end up proving that he was a seventh round steal.
Yeah.
I like this kid a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, you've got Perret, you've got Peters. And let's not forget about an undrafted guy who spent last year on the practice squad, McCainer Regis.
Yes.
Who looked huge during mini camp. Looks like he's really bulked up. Very sizey kid, and you know, he's a guy that could develop.
Yeah.
You don't know. And there's a couple of undrafted guys. Mm-hmm. This kid out of Indiana that was in mini camp. Adam Replogle.
I was looking at it last night. I think it's Replogle. Yeah.
Replogle. Anyways, boy, that kid seems violent.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got some options there, it looks like. And so you're not always solving your problems in free agency, and you're not always solving your problems in the first or second round of the draft.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, it takes a little bit to develop some of these guys, and maybe we'll see a couple of those guys I mentioned take a step forward this year.
I they're going to have the opportunity to.
Yeah, it certainly looks that way.
You know, and you know, we're kind of meandering, but that's okay.
Hey, we're just having a conversation.
It's been a while. It's been a while since we sat down.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned college free agents. Some of the guys that weren't drafted, you know, at the recent mini camp, and you know, Regis looking good, and there were a handful of guys.
Yeah.
That. I thought looked. I thought that it was obvious that they had a year under their belt.
Yeah, but you know who you know who I want to talk about though is I want to talk about Brian Banks.
Okay.
Because I think in 2 days that I was able to watch him over at minicamp, you would be hard pressed if I knew nothing about him. You would be hard pressed to convince me that guy never played a snap of college football.
Yeah. Here you go. This is for people that have maybe just seen pictures. We have the opportunity to stand inside of practice.
Yeah.
You may have seen video, but I'll be honest with you. Glancing over there and seeing Brian Banks on the field in a football helmet, you would have thought, I mean, it's Sean Weatherspoon. It's like
looks
it's clone.
It, like an NFL linebacker.
Yeah, it's Sean Weatherspoon standing there. So you got that part out of the way.
Right.
You know,
yeah, he's got the look. He passes the eye test for sure.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. This was, and you can talk a little bit about this because you wrote a little bit about it. But this mini camp, Smitty went into it throwing as much information at these guys as he possibly could because he wanted to see a couple of things: how well they retain it, how well they react to it, and when they get confused, what's their action? How do they handle something that they've got to either identify very quickly or something that they're confused with. There are so many reasons why you would want to do that. And you described it and Smitty described it as a whole part whole.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? So this was a situation where Brian Banks, you know, he spent last year in training camp with Seattle. Since then, you know, he got signed here. He's been in the weight room like crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, he's been in the film room like crazy. Him and Pat Shiller have actually been attached at the hip.
Yeah.
Going over film. Shiller, he says it's kind of funny. He told me that he's kind of taken Brian under his wing a little bit, yet Brian is like 3, 4, 5 years older than him. So he says it's kind of a weird dynamic there. But the two of them have basically been joined at the hip going over schemes, going over film, going over all this stuff. Anyways, I say all that to say this, is that for a guy who hasn't been through too many NFL practices.
Yeah.
Brian Banks sure looked like a leader out there.
Yeah, he looked like he knew what he was doing.
Exactly.
And you can't ask for much more than that at this, again, at this stage.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens, you know, around August. I can't wait to watch him, but yeah, just, you know, he looked the part, he acted the part.
Yep.
And as far as, you know, physical play and that stuff's hard to see and, you know, walkthroughs and 11-on-11 drills and things like that. You can see the actions and the athleticism sometimes, but it's hard to know exactly what you think of a player. But as far as what we've had to see so far from Brian Banks, I see no reason why he can't come into training camp, do a good job, and earn a 53-man roster spot.
Agree. Completely agree.
And I'm not however many weeks ago it was when we signed him, it was all, I'm happy that he's part of our franchise and I'm rooting for him. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And now it's
he's going to be a great story to follow throughout the year. But I think we're now past the point where we talk about his backstory and everything that he's in, as amazing as it is. And we focus on the football side of things. And I think, man, from a football perspective, he looks like a player.
Yeah.
He does like a football player. So he'll be very interesting to watch. But I want to go back, get you back to your original point there about some first-year guys.
Yeah.
So let's explain this a little bit. There's a weird rule or loophole, or I don't know what you want to call it, but if you spent last year on the practice squad and you don't have a full accrued season, you are eligible to participate in the following year's rookie minicamps.
Yeah.
These guys aren't rookies, but your Pat Schillers, your Peyton Thompsons, your McCain or Regis's, but they were able to participate in rookie minicamps.
And I think that's a great policy, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it's great from a coaching perspective, and I didn't get a chance to ask Smitty this. But you get to see after a couple of months of them being away how some of these guys have progressed.
Yeah.
You obviously liked them enough to keep them around on your practice squad and try to develop them and keep them in the organization, keep coaching them, keep trying to develop them. Well, now you get a chance to see them in a very, very different situation than you've seen them before, and that's as leaders. And that was kind of what I was talking to Schiller about is, here you are, you know, a year ago, you can't even talk on D-Block. And now, just a couple of months later, you're at rookie minicamp and you're looked at as a leader.
Yeah.
You know, how different is that? And he was talking about how, you know, you kind of have to feel like you're being judged a little differently than the other rookies because you've been around the system a little bit more. So there's no room for mistakes. So he's another guy I thought handled minicamp extremely well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Peyton Thompson jumped out at me. Just solid play out there. And there are moments when you can tell, you mentioned it earlier, how they handle not knowing what happens. And there were moments at practice when things just broke down and it was clear there was confusion on the field.
But
I thought Peyton handled himself well through everything. He played like a guy that knew what he was doing. And he took an interception from, I don't remember who was the quarterback, and I don't remember what, you know, all the scenario of the situation. But he had a pick on Sunday, the last day of practice. So, those are the kind of things you want to see. And there's, you know, even though I think the Falcons drafted two cornerbacks in the first two rounds, I think there's still a spot for him. There's an opportunity for him.
Sure.
So we'll see what happens with him.
Absolutely. And, we're talking about some guys that stood out to us. And I think there's a couple of guys, mainly on the defensive side, two linebackers, Nick Clancy and Joplo Bartu, who the both undrafted guys. I think they're gonna get a pretty good look in training camp.
Mm-hmm.
Then the two safeties, Kamal Ishmael and Zeke Mata, both very impressive to me. I think Ishmael made an interception during the second day.
Right.
You see NFL veterans making that interception.
Yeah.
It was he jumped a route and then the ball was up in the air and it was like tip drill for 5 minutes. Like the thing was up in the air and like it's being passed all around and he ends up coming down with it. It was really just a brilliant play. And then Mata looks – he's got that air of confidence. Like, you can tell, like, he knows what he's doing back there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a bigger guy than what you would expect, like, a William Moore or a Thomas Dekoe to be.
Right.
But the thing with them is that you're not looking for them to come in and try to vie for a starting position. You're looking for these guys to make their impact on special teams, and I think both of them are the type of players that I think special teams is going to suit them very well in their first couple of years.
Yeah, you know, and you know, Zeke is one of those tough guys. I mean, he you're right though. You talk about his confidence, just speaking to him and spending a couple of minutes with him after practice on Saturday. Again, you get that you just get an impression of a guy when you talk to him for a little bit, and so many of these guys that were drafted this year, and if we thought about the past and our conversations with previous rookies, we'd probably feel the same way. But it just seems like situations won't be bigger than these guys. They're not going to find them in game situations where they're at least overcome by the situation. You know, maybe they'll make a mistake. That's okay. But at least they'll still try to have that urgency that Thomas speaks about. And I think some of those mentality, those aspects, the urgency thing that I think we see from a lot of these guys. I was impressed by how well the practices went during the rookie mini camp, and I think that speaks back to their urgency and an attitude like that on special teams is important. And I think those two guys, Zeke and Kamal, will bring an attitude like that.
Absolutely.
To special teams.
And let's briefly touch on the lone guy we've left out here, the offensive guy. Well, my bad. I don't know how to count.
No, it's cool.
But Toilolo, Levine Toilolo, the tight end out of Stanford, 6'8". He is every bit of 6'8".
Yes, he is.
And, I think just from a lot of different standpoints as far as in the red zone, show me a linebacker who can match up with that.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's amazing. I was taking some pictures next to one of our undrafted free agent fullbacks.
Okay.
And he was 6'2". And then you've got Levine next to him at 6'8", and he dwarfs him. And it is absolutely amazing. And then, again, you talk about getting those hands in the air, getting those arms up in the air, and we're talking about how many feet off the ground that is.
Yeah.
And you're asking a linebacker to jump pretty darn high. If your strategy is just going to be drop back in the pocket and just throw it up and let him come down with it, good strategy to have.
Yeah. And I marvel at the statistic that I've written it and shared it a number of times, but 50 catches in college, and right off the bat, you're like, well, that's not a lot. That's not that many. 50 catches, 50 receptions in college. 10 of them were touchdowns.
Right.
And he played behind arguably the top two tight ends to come out of into the draft in the last two seasons, Colby Fleener 2 years ago, and then Zach Ertz this past year. They were both second-round picks, high second-round picks. So, you know, for whatever reason, he's been behind those guys, and now he's got another opportunity to learn even more behind another talented tight end in Tony Gonzalez. And the situation can't be much better for him, I don't think.
Right.
But I think you're going to see him used in some unique ways this season. Especially in the red zone and end zone, taking shots in there.
And I was impressed with him, how he rebounded at minicamp, because he came in. He didn't have a rough first day or anything like that, but he had a couple of drops. But then he came out the second day and caught everything that came near him.
Yeah.
You know, so look, these guys come in, and sometimes it's like they've never seen the game of football before.
Yeah.
You know, think about coming in. You've achieved your dream, and it's your first day.
Yeah.
You're probably going to be a little nervous.
Yeah.
You're around all new people, all new coaching staff. You don't know anything about this world that you're about to embark on. It can be a little strange and crazy.
It's got to be.
To see, you know, him have a couple of drops on the first day and then come back and basically catch everything that came near him was a lot of fun to see. And he really showed the kind of weapon that he can be. And I think, like you mentioned, learning under Tony Gonzalez, I mean, there is no better tutor to have. And here's the thing. Tony's a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
you see these two guys next to each other, Tony's going to look like a child.
Yeah.
I mean, for real.
It's crazy. I mean, I spent the time, and this took me a while. I went through every roster in the NFL, and Toy Lolo's the tallest.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the guy's 6'8". He deserves some love for just being 6'8".
Yeah.
If no other thing, if nothing else. But yeah, I think it's a great situation for him, having the opportunity to learn under Tony and ease into, and they're gonna they'll pick their shots with him.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a good situation, and I love that. He just continued to accept coaching. Coach Selfo,
yes,
was you talk about being joined at the hip with Schiller and Banks. It was these two guys.
Yeah,
he spent all weekend talking to him.
Yep,
and it was never any aggressive coaching or anything like that. But you know, I mean, he talked to him almost constantly.
Yeah,
and Toy Lolo just listened. And
Selfo is one of the best in the business.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
So he's got a great mentor. Right there, and then you talk about the Hall of Famer who will be joining him pretty soon here in the classroom, and that'll be a good resource to have.
Absolutely.
So. And then, you know, Sean Renfrey was the other offensive player that we were talking about. He was the quarterback that stood out to me. I think he looked fantastic.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic, and I know there were some questions among the fans about spending a seventh-round pick on a backup quarterback and everything, and hey, I'm all for it because you think, you know, Houston a couple of years ago –
Yeah,
is that the point you were gonna make? I'm sorry.
No. But you're right. I was like, your biggest investment. You need to have a pretty good a backup plan, right? He's your biggest investment for a reason.
Right. And we talk about depth at all these other positions. Why not quarterback?
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is that nobody's gonna be challenging Matt for the starting position. Mm-hmm. That's not the purpose. And you know, I think Renfrey is gonna be the guy who's just gonna be the third quarterback, but you need a good third quarterback.
Yeah.
You really do.
Yeah.
And we saw last year, you know, you had Dominic Davis was a really good third quarterback.
Well, yeah.
Now Dominic Davis is going to be the number two quarterback, it looks like. So, you know, when your backup quarterbacks, okay, your two current backup quarterbacks have 1 year of NFL experience and not, I mean, I'm trying to remember, did Dom take any snaps at all during the regular season last year?
No.
So you've got 1 year of experience between two guys and zero snaps in regular season games. You need to have two pretty good quarterbacks.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right? Because I think it's pretty clear that you're not going to bring a veteran quarterback.
Right.
If the worst was to happen, you want to have a couple of good options, and I think Renfrey gives you that.
Yeah.
Smart kid.
Mm-hmm.
Has a command of the game. He looked very confident over the weekend.
Yeah.
Looks like he's got great mechanics.
He comes from, you know, Duke and Coach Cutcliffe, who has ties back to the Manning family.
Right.
He is, you know, known as a QB coach, like a guy that turns guys into, you know, NFL ready or at least, you know, NFL prospect quarterback. So comes from a good teaching system.
Right. And again, you know, you look at a couple of years ago when Matt Schaub got hurt.
Yeah.
You know. And you're like, well, you're in the middle of a playoff push, and you're starting. Well, I'm sorry. When did Schaub get hurt?
It was
in the middle of the season, wasn't it?
No, it was two seasons ago.
Two seasons ago.
Yeah.
It was like in the middle of the season or late in the season, and then all of a sudden you got to go to your backup. Who's your backup? T.J. Yates.
Well, it was Liner, and then
it was
T.J. Liner.
Yates. Yes,
and he went out.
But yeah, exactly. But you've got this third quarterback who's a rookie.
Mm-hmm. Late-round guy.
Right. Who, you know, he was drafted in the fifth round, so you used a fifth-round pick on him. And if you're a Houston fan, at the time you're probably thinking, well, why are we spending a fifth-round pick on a quarterback when we've got Matt Schaub?
Yeah.
We've got Matt Leinart. Why do we need him? Well, this is why.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a guy that took you to the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's why.
And, you know, similar style guys, you know, not overly hyped guys, mechanically sound guys. So, you know, if you're going to compare it like that, you know, you're right. I mean, you're only as good as your backups in some regards. So
yeah.
I thought Renfrey was a solid pick. You know, I like the makeup, the stuff that goes into making him maybe, you know, a reasonable pick. And it seems like a sound decision to me.
Yeah.
I am looking forward to seeing Dominique, though.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Camp.
I'm really excited to see see how he reacts in his second year. And, you know, I think the sky's the limit for him. A lot of fans were excited about him.
And I know we got to move on, but you mentioned Matt Schaub. We can go even further back and recall that Matt Schaub came from Atlanta.
Who was a back? Yes, exactly.
And he turned a third round pick into a second round pick. So there's always that thing as well.
I mean, there's so many different strategies that go on.
Yeah,
that you've got to
develop a good guy. You know, maybe someone else will want him to be their number one.
Maybe. All right. Well, let's move on. We've covered the rookies and mini camp and all that kind of stuff. Let's get on to our always popular Falcons Flash.
Yes.
Where we share one story from the internet that we have seen that has caught our eye.
Yes, I am frustrated today.
Oh, you are angry. Are you angry?
I'm angry.
Okay, Daniel's a little frustrated.
I have a bone to pick with Matthew Berry from ESPN.com, who's the talented Mr. Roto, the fantasy guru they have over there.
Let him have it.
So he released his top 200 players. And this is fantasy football, so we separate real football from fantasy. Let's just qualify that. His top players in fantasy football for 2013, he's projecting, stats and whatnot. First of all, kind of interesting, Steven Jackson is the number 12 player. He's the 11th ranked running back. Kind of interesting. Wow. But here's what I have an issue with. Julio Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Where does Julio fall on this list?
He's got to be like top three, right?
Top three. That's funny, Jay. No, he is number 25. He is the sixth wide receiver available. Here's what I know about Julio Jones. Last year I was in a fantasy league. First time I played in a while. And I'm going to go with the home team, so I picked Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. And Julio won me a ton of games. He has Calvin Johnson as the number one pick. I'm sorry, the number one wide receiver. I'm going to take Matt Ryan over Matthew Stafford any day. I'm going to take the offense of what's happening in Atlanta versus the offense in Detroit.
Hey,
Calvin Johnson,
let me tell you something. If you're not taking Matt Ryan in your league this year as much as this offense is going to throw the ball.
Just go ahead and make it a sweep on the offensive players.
Yes, exactly.
Just set your lineup. I'm going to take Tony and Matt and Steven. And
right.
But Calvin Johnson broke the record last season, I believe, with his big season with yards. But he only had 5 touchdowns. All right. Julio had 10. And if you don't think Julio is going to get more than 10 touchdowns this year, I think you're crazy, but I don't see how Julio can't be at least your top three wide receiver. So I'm gonna go ahead and say I disagree with Matthew Berry. I'm frustrated. Julio was my number one receiver last year, and I think he's better than the 6 wide receivers deep. So there's your fantasy advice for today.
You get a little fired up there.
Yeah.
a little
I'm just trying to defend these guys.
A little spunk going on in the Falcon Cast podcast. I like it. No, I agree. I mean, I'd take Julio as my top
AJ
wide receiver.
Green, and they're always going to be tied, but AJ Green was the second wide receiver. Then Brandon Marshall, Dez Bryant, and Percy Harvin.
I say who out of those guys has the most potential to score you the most touchdowns?
Yeah.
For me, it's Julio.
Yeah.
When you look at this offense, when you look at Matt Ryan.
Absolutely.
From a fantasy perspective, that's going to be the guy that I'm gunning for.
Yeah. I mean, I get Calvin Johnson being where he is. I get it. I still think Julio can make a run for that number one spot. Some of these other guys, nothing against them. I mean, they're great players, but, come on.
Come on.
Come on. I mean, come on.
Come on. Come on.
Take a look at this Atlanta offense. Come on.
All right.
What do you have?
All right. I have a nice heartwarming story.
That's good.
As you may have noticed, we were out last night at the Gwinnett Braves game. Mm-hmm. Gwinnett Braves being the AAA farm club of the Atlanta Braves. And Matt Ryan was out there throwing the first pitch with 3 other famous Boston athletes, Jason Veritek, former Red Sox catcher.
Mm-hmm. And Georgia Tech catcher.
And Georgia Tech catcher. Dee Brown, former Celtic.
Mm-hmm.
And
Slam Dunk Award winner.
Slam Dunk Award winner.
Slam Dunk Contest winner. He won that.
Right.
That's the one where he did the – he covered his eyes.
Dee Brown was so good in the Slam Dunk. That was when the Slam Dunk Contest was good. But also Rodney Harrison, former Patriots safety. All four of them on hand last night at the Gwinnett Braves game. Gwinnett playing the Pawtucket Red Sox, which is the AAA farm club of the Boston Red Sox. For Boston Strong Night, a night that was designed to honor the victims of the recent bombings in Boston. And what a great night it was. Mm-hmm. So amazing to see those four guys and Matt in particular just take time out of his day and go over there. And he met so many people, talked to so many people throughout the first pitch. This is the biggest news of it all is that there was a silent auction with some items from each of the four athletes. And from that, and from doing autograph sessions for donations and all that stuff, the Gwinnett Braves were able to raise $15,000 for the Boston One Fund, that's which amazing. Is going to benefit the victims of the Boston bombings. So that's awesome. Just fantastic stuff. We've got all kinds of coverage of it on the website right now, AtlantaFalcons.com. You can see a photo gallery from last night, and we're going to have a video up there from it. We mic'd Matt up last night.
Cool. So, that's awesome.
It was a lot of fun.
That is cool. Very cool.
So we'll have that video all out there today. So very cool thing that Matt did last night, and very cool thing that the Gwinnett Braves did as well, raised some money even from down here in Georgia. So great cause and a great night. So a lot of fun. Right?
Yeah, it was. Okay. Absolutely. Good. Absolutely.
Am I disrupting you?
No, or? No.
Okay.
Not at all. All
right. Just want to make sure. All right. So let's wrap this thing up, and let's wrap it up the right way with a round of applause, I think. For you and I. A little
kudos.
Self-pat on the back.
Yeah.
Why are we doing this, fans? Well, it's not often when Daniel and I feel like we can be shoehorned into giving our picks. I personally don't like giving out picks and predictions because chances are you're going to be wrong because none of us can see the future. And there's always going to be those people that will like save that prediction and wait for you to be wrong and then call you out for being wrong.
Yeah, within minutes of being wrong.
Minutes, okay? This is why I stay out of the business of trying to predict things because it just doesn't work for me. Because I have a fragile ego. So, I'm kidding. Not kidding. So, here's the thing. We took a little bit of a leap, and we said, all right, well, we're going to come up with our kind of mock draft for draft week. And we chose the top three picks. And lo and behold, both of us nailed it right on.
Yep.
With
Desmond
Trufant, number one. Both of us picked him.
It's pretty amazing.
Even as mock drafts were shimmying and shaking in all different directions.
Yeah, tight end.
Tight end. Come on. Come on, man. So we got it right. I think it's a reason to celebrate.
It is a reason to celebrate. I personally, I do, and I think you should take a lot of pride in it. Maybe there's a side career in draft prognostication.
Or reading tarot cards.
Palms. Foreseeing the future.
Seeing the future.
Yeah. The podcast is now, we'll help the Falcons fans see the future on the podcast every week. This is a great marketing tool for the podcast.
I agree. I'm with you. Now, don't ask us what our second and third round picks were because we don't really those don't count.
But, well.
Only the first round counts.
We did say there would be a move.
Yep.
A trade. We had a trade-up scenario in the first round.
Traded.
Yep. And I think we traded our third round pick. So
yeah.
You know, and it's all on the internet, so you can go find it and confirm that if exactly. you doubt us for some reason.
Exactly. But, and where are the people who are coming out of the woodwork to tell us, hey, great job for being
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I haven't heard.
I haven't heard one thing.
Yeah, I know.
Come on.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous.
I know. But, oh well.
Well, great job, Jay.
Good job, Daniel.
Thank you.
Great work. All right, let's wrap it up with three things we are looking forward to seeing as OTAs begin at the end of this month.
Yes.
OTAs will get started and we'll be...
yeah.
Going full force.
Yeah, once a week we'll get to be out there on the field watching practice and yep. talking to the players afterwards or before in the locker room. And yeah, I mean, it's our season kind of starts then. You know, we start to once we get to talk to the guys again. It's that's when the good stuff starts to happen
that's
on
right.
the website at least. So
that's right.
But yeah, what are you looking forward to?
I think number one. We kind of discussed it. I'm really looking forward to seeing Brian Banks next to some veterans
mm-hmm.
and see how he looks next to some veterans and how he handles being out there with Sean and with Akeem and with some of the other guys, Robert James,
mm-hmm.
how he handles being around the veterans. That's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, obviously, I want to see – Desmond Trufant and Robert Alford
yeah.
versus Roddy White and Julio Jones.
Okay.
Because, I mean, when you talk about going to school, right, and yeah. learning, what better way than to play against those two receivers?
Absolutely. And that's a good point.
I cannot wait to see how those guys match up and if Desmond and Robert can ever get the better of the two, and who knows.
Yeah.
But it's going to be
– Trufant, you know, he – there was a moment when he had a great play and he celebrated a little bit at rookie minicamp. So I think that he's got a little bit of that in him.
Sure.
Which is good. I like my cornerbacks to have a little pizzazz.
Hey, and wait till Asante gets around him.
Yeah, exactly.
Asante will just drips that swag on
yeah.
everybody else. So.
Sprinkle swag
yep,
everywhere.
Exactly.
Around the field. so that'll be fun.
So
sure.
that'll definitely be fun. And I want to see how things start to shape up. I'll say at two positions. I want to see how they start to shape up at defensive end, and I want to see how they start to shape up at the right tackle spot.
Yeah,
you know, it looks like Mike Johnson and Lamar Holmes are going to be the two guys going after it. So let's see. I mean, let's get this party started.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So those are my three.
Three things. Those are good three things. I look forward to seeing. How often Toy Lolo is off to the side talking to Tony Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
And I look forward to seeing if Toy Lolo is going to play catch with Tony before a practice. He may not be able to just because of where he responsibilities he may have to have. But I know Tony will play catch as often as he can throughout practice. So I'm curious to see how many times he's going to do that. And you know, watching that relationship kind of take place on the practice field. I mentioned it before, but I'm just Dominique Davis. I think we were always interested in the unknown, and Dominique Davis has a bit of an unknown quality about him. He was fun to cover from a writer, you know, from the perspective of what we do last year, just because he kind of came from nowhere and he was impressing and handling himself well. So I'm curious to see. How he kind of handles that step up from last season to this year at QB2. And my third one, there's not going to be a lot of returning going on special teams. There'll be a lot of special teams work, but it's more situational and prior to the snap kind of, or prior to the kick and up to the kick kind of things. But I'm curious to see where Robert Alford's going to fall into that return specialist mix. Because, mm-hmm. you know, there's going to be competition.
Sure.
Jaquiz Rogers, if we're talking about Robert Alford as a returner, you know, kick and punt returner, Jaquiz wasn't terrible there last year. He had positive production, and ultimately that's the goal. But he's not going to give that job up, I wouldn't think, necessarily. Just give it up. So
right.
I'm curious to see who's going to be in the mix there.
Sure.
And it's early to know, you know, who's going to come out and emerge. And you're not going to, like, again, we're not going to see returns taking place. But I'm just curious to see who's in that mix at practice. So there's a couple of things.
I like it.
Cool.
It's a good three things.
Yeah.
Well, this was fun.
It was fun.
Let's not do it next week.
I know. It's going to be a shame.
I know. We're again, once again, we will not. Well, we're going to have a podcast. I won't be on it.
The plan is to have a podcast.
Because I am going to take a much needed vacation.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to get out of town. I'm going to go home.
Yes. That's a great thing.
Rest up. I'm not going to take a vacation from Twitter, though, because I feel like I would get the shakes or something
I
can't.
I mean, yeah.
Can't pull myself.
Where are you going to get all your news and all your jokes? And
right. And where am I going to, like, you know, tweet out passive aggressive sarcasm? You know, I've got to have.
It's a good outlet for you, Jay.
It is. It's great. So I won't be on the podcast next week. Daniel will be here with Matt Moore, right? Mm-hmm. Moore is going to step in.
Hopefully.
And they're gonna give you about an hour's worth of thoughts on Teen Mom.
Make sure to tune in for that. Yeah, you do not want to miss that. And Daniel, I'm sure lots of other topics.
You got to get your Teen Mom scouting report.
Yeah.
Because Matt Moore knows his Teen Mom.
Yeah,
so.
and other viral things on the internet.
Yep. Yes, exactly. So. I'm sure that those discussions will be thrilling, and I look forward to hearing them while I'm on vacation.
Cool.
It'll
excellent.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Yes.
All right. Well, I'll be back in 2 weeks. Daniel will be back with you next week. Make sure to tune in. As always, thank you so much for joining us here on the Falcon Cast podcast, and we will talk to you next week.
Sprinkle swag.
Sprinkling swag.